try. Oh, yeah, we're going to try very hard. Good morning. You are with Gareth Cliff Show live on The Real Network, and Leanne Mulder's here. Hooray!
Yay!
Well, we're very happy to have you back, Ass, and I know you've had a couple of really rough days and weeks. How's the family?
Yeah.
Her dad died. We're just filling it in in case people don't know. Because, you know, people are awkward about that stuff, right?
They're
like, as soon as they see you for the first time after you've lost someone in your family, it's obviously it's as big a deal as it gets.
Mm.
And then they're like, hi, Leanne. And
they get weird, right? You seem different to people when you're in my position. Like, people see me differently now. Mm. For a little bit, they will.
Yeah.
Like tiptoeing around me, etc.
Good, use it to your advantage.
Yeah, I have a few times I've had to play the card. Any bills that I missed or anything, I'm just like, well, my dad died.
No, you just cry.
Yeah, so I mean, it was very, very sad because he was only 68.
No, sure. And a fit, healthy guy for most of that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you can see, I've got a little eye twitch going on.
Ooh, is it a... Do you think that's part of...
Yeah, it's like part of the stress and the tiredness, really.
It's got like a mini Tourette's thing happening in one eye.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I'm going to be watching your eye all morning. This is going to be so much fun.
I wake up every morning and I'm like, oh, it's gone. No,
there it is.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. It's very... Wait, hang on. I haven't even seen it yet. Oh, there's a little one. A little bit of a twitch. How exciting. Okay.
Yeah, no one can really understand unless you lose a parent that you love. But
it's important to make that distinction too. I mean, like, some people don't get along well with...
Yeah, some people are like good riddance, you know.
Yeah.
Not like that for us. Very, very close family. Saw him every single day of his 5 months in hospital. Eventually he weighed 47 kilograms.
Oh, that's awful.
Really struggling, and it was one step forward, two steps back. But right from, you know, we went to go and my brother and I went to go and see his body in the morning.
Oof.
And the surgeons were the intensivist who was there was the one who tried to revive him for half an hour. He was crying. He said, I've never known a patient who's so well liked by all of the doctors, all the nurses, the other patients. Just a really loved man. And it was when we started putting together the guest list for the memorial service. We said that we would have it in our home garden because we always wanted him to kind of come home to his garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the list just grew and grew. You realize that you accumulate so many friends, acquaintances. Some family members die, but then new ones who replace them. And eventually we had to go to a venue. But
we had it
at a private botanical garden, which was just beautiful. And the day felt more like a celebration, which is what was great.
That's awesome.
People had such a lovely time. You know, we were just freely walking around the gardens and chatting in our own time. And it really was beautiful and light and a celebration. Which is great.
You can't ask for more, right?
Nobody wanted to be stuck in a church.
Or miserable.
And just, neither just would like, my dad. Know,
with sad speeches and
organ music.
Yeah. Oh, no. Not
pamphlets.
Everybody's
idea. We didn't even have pamphlets because there were no hymns to sing or anything like that. And it was so interesting because my dad was born on Christmas Day. He was baptized Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh, yeah.
His mother had been brought up, my gran, in a Jewish family through adoption. And my dad himself was Buddhist.
So you got all of them there. It's pretty.
Marrying my mom.
It's a bit of a free-for-all.
whose mother's deeply Christian. So we had kind of normal, eulogies and fun memories and laughs. And then I stood up to do... Me.
Uh-oh.
I stood up to do the Christian reading and the Buddhist prayer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, they found the only staunch agnostic atheist in the family.
Wow. really bad delegation of duties here. I think that we need to call someone in from your family.
But that brought out a laugh because I said immediately, if anyone who knows me knows that doing a Christian service reading, a sermon reading,
yeah,
and a Buddhist prayer is probably not up my alley. That made people laugh. But in essence, you know, he found the goodness in any religion. And as I was searching through his books the study of Buddhism,
mm-hmm,
I found passages that he highlighted. And you do only realize after the person's gone how much they really loved something or were so passionate about it. Yeah. He was very quietly passionate about it. So, yeah, that was really amazing. We found some amazing prayers or readings as well, which was great. But yes, and then family time with family members who'd come from overseas, his brother and sister, and ended up staying with the family. So we made sure we did something lovely every day. For instance, cool, going to Cradle of Humankind,
yeah,
spending the day out there. Just, you know, happy, but a little bit somber. And now that they've gone, it's back to work, and that's a new phase to get through.
Yeah.
But
you have to keep busy as well, huh?
You have to keep busy, but you also have to not feel guilty about moving on and thinking of what the person would want for you. And you're not going to forget at all. You may need to concentrate at work, but you save a little bit of time every day to remember and to feel sad.
James, we're going to have to cancel those higher grade maths tests that we had prepared for Leanne. I think it might be a bit too much for her for the first day. Those 3 5-hour exams we wanted her to do for fun. Remember?
I would have failed them anyway. You know me and maths. I did say to the family yesterday, oh, the shift was from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m., so it was 6 hours. To which my brother responded, so obviously from 1 a.m. to 1 p.m. would be the shortest.
Yeah, you're still really good at maths.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I've the last 2 weekends have been odd for me. I've kind of mostly been just chilling. But I am also now the only person who's cleaning my house and sorting out all of that shit. So I'm doing washing.
Oh, yeah. You don't have any help?
No, Leanne.
Your help has left?
I've had such a hard time. I mean, I know your dad died, but I'm having a very hard time.
Is this by choice?
There's no one. I have to clean. It's so sad. My life is so difficult. Me. Anyway, how about you?
Now you?
No, it's nice though. I mean, it's, you know, therapeutic. You're listening to podcasts. You're busy tidying up, sorting out. I'm also kind of getting into, it's that time of year now where you're starting to think, shit, the end of the year is right around the corner. And it is.
Mm.
You have to get your stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, start thinking like, whoa, 2025 is just around the corner. We've got to get our heads right.
Mm.
And we start preparing.
We kind of think that there's this big block of nothingness at the end of the year.
But always.
It's not really. It goes by very quickly, and it's, for most people, a week.
Yeah. No, I think there are also lots and lots of people who are just very, very tired.
Because
it's been a pretty insane year. I mean, I don't expect you to have been paying attention to the news in the last 2 weeks, but man. Has there been a lot going on in the world?
Well,
and
I
woke up this morning, I see that there are all these anti-Semitic attacks in Holland, Sweden, some really horrible things happening in the news. I obviously, there's the come down from Trump's election last week and America coming to terms with that too. The rest of the world also coming to terms with it.
Mm.
So there's plenty going on. I mean, it's not as if, you know, no matter what happens in your life, it's not as if everything stops.
No, exactly. And I mean, Trump's re-election was right in the middle of everything for us. And we had my uncle, Robert Kennedy, who is a true Kennedy from New York. He was with us. And my uncle from Australia, both of them Republicans. And we just banned talking about politics.
Yeah,
it was banned.
It would have led to all kinds of trouble, right? Yeah.
I mean, the results came through.
Families.
We all looked at our phones and we went.
So it was that difficult.
Yes, very.
Because I know in America there are families that have been torn apart over the last couple of months over these elections, and now that it's done, hopefully they can also just get on with it.
Yeah,
got to deal with reality.
I mean, you've obviously spoken about it. here, but I don't know. I haven't heard what your opinion about it is and how you feel about it.
Thrilled.
Okay, I thought so.
What must I tell you? I am absolutely over the moon delighted that this happened, and I think it's very good for America and the world. And it's a reckoning that the American people have been wanting to have with powerful elites, with the state, with the Democratic Party. There are a lot of like things that they have to deal with now, things that they've got to sort out that they've been putting on the back burner for too long. They've been kicking the can down the road about stuff which Americans care about. And this has been like an overwhelming mandate given to the Republicans and to Trump, in spite of everything. I mean, I heard Kamala Harris, by the way, I heard she spent over $1 billion. She raised $1 billion in campaign funding. Obviously, a lot of that she wasted on stupid celebrity endorsements, which were completely ineffective. I don't think they're able to manage any measurement of celebrity endorsements and whether or not they helped. But I don't think they've made a scrap of difference. You know, certainly it appears to me that, like, I know it's hard to accept this, but Cardi B really didn't persuade anybody. It's like there were maybe a couple of million people who were like, well, we don't know what to do, but as soon as we hear from Cardi B, we'll know. Said nobody.
No.
And we spoke last week about how celebrity endorsements are just it's the worst possible investment. Celebrities can't sell shit anymore.
Mm-mm.
And that's
become
good.
Worthless.
It's become, but it's good. We needed like a rebalancing. I mean, someone like Cardi B, for example, has been paid millions of dollars to back certain brands and products. And now people are going, whoa, hang on a second. If this person can't even persuade someone who is going to do something that doesn't earn them money, doesn't really change their lives on a day-to-day basis, but we can persuade them to change their beliefs, change their votes, or even just, if they don't care about it, cast the vote. She couldn't do that.
Mm.
What's her value? Same goes for Taylor Swift. Same goes for Beyonce.
Was Taylor Swift paid?
J-Lo.
Do you think?
Who knows? I don't think these people do it for nothing. And they've got managers and people who are like these horrible people in the background who are like, we're not doing that for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they want their share of the pie, right? But who knows? Maybe they just did it because they support a candidate. There is that rare opportunity of like honesty. But I think people are also, whether they're young or old, there's something going on at the moment that I feel is, it's undeniable that people are just sick of like bullshit. They just don't want to hear a bullshit story anymore. They'd rather hear from someone who's thought something through. This is what I believe. This is what I think. This is how I feel. Mm. And explain yourself. Mm. It's not just roll the dice and that's what I believe because some famous person believes it.
And or somebody who was paid for it.
Well, yeah, probably even worse. Yeah. I think lots and lots of people are just not interested in hearing from like really, really wealthy, really successful, famous people when they're going through their own shit. They're like, I'm worried about the cost of petrol, gas in America.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I care about what these celebrities say? You know? And I think that would be
true. It
doesn't
carry as much weight as it did.
No.
At all.
I mean, I'm trying to think now, is there a celebrity who you would go, oh my God, if that person says something, I'll listen?
No.
No.
No one in the world.
There's no one for me either. I'm like, well, whoever. I mean, you might be a very nice person. I saw Prince William was in the country the other day.
Yes.
He was talking about this Earthshot Prize, which it seems to me a very good thing. But, you know, he went on about climate change, and I was suddenly like,
bit of a muzzy.
I don't need a prince to tell me that ordinary people all over the world are fucking the world up, and, you know, you stop now, you peasants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need that. You don't need that. No one wants to hear that. And by the way, if you're going to tackle anything to do with the environment, you're going to talk to me about climate change or, you know, the polar ice caps are melting or they're cutting down forests or very, very worthy things worthy of our attention. If you're going to talk about any of that, you need to say to me how you're going to deal with China and India and other countries that are burning fossil fuels at a rate that we, if we burnt every scrap of coal we could find in South Africa, we wouldn't get to the levels that they're doing. Unless you have a plan for India and China, I don't want to hear you just virtue signal.
And in fact, he was, it was Robert Irwin, Steve Irwin's son, who put a video out on social media of him and the prince chatting casually in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And in the comments, everyone was like, forget the prince. Robert Irwin's here. They were more excited about Robert Irwin. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's Steve Irwin's kid. I saw the best, I don't know if it's a meme or just a picture that was out there on the weekend of Steve Irwin, like with some animal, some little furry animal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, there's 100% chance you're reading this in my voice. Which is exactly right. But yeah, listen, there's no one in the world who is so special that whatever they say is gospel.
No, not anymore. Absolutely not.
So in some way, like this is the this is the most humble period in human history in some way, because we're not going to take anyone and elevate them to the status of godliness. Lindy says, Trump's already calling the shots to stop gender transformation surgery in kids. Kids, listen, I can't talk this morning. Can't fault the guy. I never understood how that was legal in the first place. Yeah, he's doing a lot. I mean, I kind of, as a bit of a joke, I tweeted something out about how in his first 72 hours, he's already achieved a bunch of things. And I don't know, some people might think this is very, very stupid, but he's not president yet, right? Mm-hmm. He's just the president-elect. So as the president-elect, there's really very little you can do except wait around until January the 20th, I think, when you are inaugurated. But he's been working with a transition team in the background for some time now. Getting the
transformation team. The gender transformation team.
Yeah, the gender transition team, yeah. They're going to be doing that. And the things that he's achieved in the first 72 hours, you know, I mean, like suddenly Hezbollah and Hamas are like, we'd really like to think about this peace thing that you've been throwing around for a while. Why? Because there isn't a vegetable in the White Office, in the White House for a very long time. They've got Joe Biden in there. I don't know. He's growing roots or he's fallen asleep with his pudding spilt all over him or something. But he's in there until January the 20th. But they're not worried about him. They're worried about what comes afterwards. So they're suddenly jumping. China and Ukraine are both saying, let's figure out a way to resolve this. This is good. This would never have happened if Kamala had become president.
Mm.
You know? They would have been like, whatever's happening in America, we'll just ignore that, carry on, do our own thing.
But just to go to Lindy's comment about gender transformation surgery in kids.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's important.
Are you still going for your up?
To realize I went for it a long time ago. I passed.
Have
now.
You transitioned completely?
But no, understand one thing. Many children are born with both genders. It's more common than you think. And a decision has to be made within a few days.
What, like vagina and cock and balls?
Yes, wow. Or like a uterus and testes.
Oh, like a hermaphrodite thing.
Yeah,
oh,
happens right. More often than you know, and they have to have gender transformation surgery at a very young age. Often there are complications with passing urine. Those decisions have to be made within days. So stopping gender transformation surgery in kids, it's a fine line. Sometimes it's completely necessary.
No. I think what they're talking about is not when a child is born and it needs to be functional. That's something that doctors will still have complete jurisdiction over.
I wonder.
No, they will. This is about, you know, people who are 6 or 7 being put on puberty blockers because their parents think it would be nice to have an accessory trans kid. You know, that's what we're talking about. And there are people as deranged as that. They suffer from Munchausen's. They make their children go through these things so they can say at dinner parties, well, you know, I've got a them, they, or whatever. And really, there are people that twisted.
Mm.
And then there are obviously kids who've been misled by propaganda and nonsense that they're real. The source of their problem isn't that they are obviously 13 and going through puberty and it's tough and you just want to get away from, you hate your hair, your skin, your body, you hate everything about yourself. And, oh, wait, here's a possible explanation that will guarantee you don't get bullied because people won't be allowed to say anything. become a them there.
Mm.
And it is. It's like an art for some people.
Yeah.
And I listen, there are. And I think even the most hawkish person in the Trump regime, I don't know if hawkish is really even a term you could use in this context, but anyway, I think all of them realize that there are genuinely people who have body dysmorphia. And there are.
Oh.
And I think those people fall outside of the scope of an overall ban. But at the moment, it's like if you grew up in certain states in America and you decided on a whim that you now wanted to be called Sheila, you don't need your parents' permission to go and end up in a program where you will ultimately have transition surgery. And I don't think that that's right. I think parents should be consulted. I think that schools shouldn't be able to keep this information from parents, which is also part of the problem. And it's not a big widespread issue. It happens, but it's been a social contagion, as per a number of really, really good books that have been brought out over the last 3 or 4 years. More of a social contagion than an actual ongoing social issue. Mm. And we'll see whether or not that's true now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be parents who will fight, you know, for their kids to have the right to go through this stuff. Again, on a case-by-case basis, you have to evaluate them.
Mm.
There's no way you can make it an overall rule and say, well, nobody or everybody. And I think that's what's going to happen. But we'll see what goes on because there's so much scope now for, you know, Trump and his team, which includes some very, very smart people. He hasn't just brought the same people who were in there before, or a bunch of Washington insiders and bureaucrats, and people are trying to protect their own jobs, which we saw from the last administration. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's see how quickly he fires as well this time around.
Yeah, and he should be firing a lot of people. So at least he's had practice on the Apprentice.
Yes.
You're fired. Anyway, that's not the only story. And there's quite a lot going on in the US at the moment. But that might not be your focus at all. It might be here in South Africa at home. A lot of stories in the news about tech and all kinds of other cool stuff happening.
Nice.
And we've got Dr. Hanan joining us in a short while. So we'll catch up with him. I've got this story, which I thought might be quite interesting. I never knew that cheese was such a big deal. But apparently, a recent cheese theft in the U.S. I'm going to try not to laugh. Okay. A recent cheese theft in the U.K., which has been dubbed the Great Cheese Robbery, involved the disappearance of 950 truckles of cheese. Is that a...
I think so.
Is that it's a unit like of a cheese?
If you think about a...
Like a wheel of cheese.
A wheel, yeah.
A truckle of cheese. Apparently, these 950 truckles of cheese, valued at 5.6 million rand, which is... It's quite a lot of money for cheese, you know?
Jesus. The incident
highlights a growing trend in food-related crime, particularly targeting luxury cheese, which is becoming increasingly valuable. The global food industry loses an estimated $30 to $50 billion annually to food crime. Did you know this?
No, I had no idea.
Food crime.
No idea. I didn't know people were stealing cheese.
High prices fueled
by... A truckle is about 1 kilogram.
You looked it up. Thank you.
I'm looking at
a truckle.
thecastclub.co.za. A Boerland truckle, approximately 1 kilogram, for instance. And that in this case is 485 rand in South Africa.
So this is expensive.
And yes, it is one of those big moldy circular wheels.
A wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently high prices, rising production costs, inflation are leading to more smuggling and theft of food. Although cheese theft isn't new, incidents reported as far back as 1998, you know, the cheese thieves have been busy since then. The frequency of these crimes is increasing. Lock up your cheese.
Wow. And no, it's not those processed little slices that you slap onto your burger.
No, it's not. No one's
We're
coming
talking
to
about
get,
the good stuff.
No one's coming to get your Gouda, all right?
Yeah.
Calm the fuck down, Sharon. No one's coming to get your cheddar. It's not the, oh my God, I thought I had some camembert in the fridge, but the fucking cheese thieves have taken it. So don't worry. It would be the more expensive, more rare, more
your
fancy
jar of Melrose is fine.
Yeah, I think that'll be a processed cheese. You don't have to worry. Organized crime networks are capitalizing on the food industry by infiltrating legitimate businesses to transport stolen goods, taking advantage of the fact that food-related crimes generally carry lighter sentences than drug crimes. So if you're going to steal cocaine or, you know, heroin or any of the really hard drugs, yeah, you'll get a very hard sentence. Mm. Steal cheese?
Because it can affect other people in a negative way. But stealing cheese just means some people don't get cheese and some people. It's the great cheese robbery.
Oh, wow.
Did they spell it like that?
I don't know. I think it's very clever if they did.
Yeah.
And then they say that there is a person in South Africa who they're already looking at who's a major cheese theft kingpin. But they're not entirely sure who it might be. They're going to start with fat people and they'll winnow it down from there.
Yeah.
So if you know anyone who's really, really fat, ask them about a truckle of cheese. And if they know, then it's a high chance they could be the kingpin.
You do wonder what the kingpin of cheese theft would look like.
I think they'd be quite big. They'd have to be. Well, if you were forced to steal food, what would you steal? Because you know how in South Africa we've got this big problem, right?
Mm.
Whenever a truck breaks down and it's got food or alcohol in it,
or
whatever,
something.
Yeah, usually food and drink. It's like, you know, although, I mean, sometimes you see a truck breakdown with like HD TVs on it, and that provides another opportunity. It's suddenly people just arrive out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You could break down in the middle of the Karoo.
Yes.
There's not a person for 100 miles.
There's a certain smell that filters into the air when a truck overturns.
It's the weirdest thing, and you can see this in cities, out in the country, just pretty much anywhere. If any of these trucks that are carrying lots of stuff break down or they fall over, because really, I mean, no one knows what's in a truck until like they fall over or it breaks down and then the doors open or whatever. But as soon as people know what's in there, forget about it.
Come out of
right?
nowhere.
And I saw someone moaning about this on Twitter the other day, and I was like, what are you going to do though? So we don't have a means of, imagine there was like a broadcaster. People of South Africa, please stop stealing shit from broken down trucks. Because they do. Not cheese, TVs, cheese. I'm sure cheese would be stolen.
Oh, yeah. Anything.
Soft drinks, alcohol trucks, whenever they break down. And like people can see what's in there, forget about it.
Yeah. There must be quite a science to stealing cheese as well. You've got to retain its value, so you have to keep it at a certain temperature, store it in a certain way if you're going to try and sell it on the black market.
And it's hard work.
It is hard work.
You're not stealing something that's going to last forever or that you can exchange for other things easily.
And it can be stinky work too.
It can be very, like a smelly cheese, very bad. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I get to restaurants and they bring the chili and the
Parmesan
and that the smell of the Parmesan cheese.
Oh, really?
I send it away.
My mom hates it because she says it looks like foot shavings.
but it smells to me like, I don't know. I mean, I'm very sensitive to the smell of things. That's why also with cheeses, I'm not a big fan of anything that isn't very, very mild. I can only.
You won't eat blue cheese.
Oh, hell no. I don't. Oh. None of that stuff. They put any of it in a salad, I'm out. I can't do it.
Goat's cheese?
Nope. Well, I mean, feta. Isn't feta goat's cheese? I can do feta.
It is, but I'm talking more like.
All right, I can name them.
Yeah.
They're only like three or four I can actually eat.
Cheddar,
mozzarella, gouda, feta. That's me. I'm not going to pretend I have a sophisticated palate for this stuff. I know people who will, they'll like lose their mind over some cheese that's been under a bell jar for 20 years.
In the ground.
And it's crumbly or it's watery
or it's
runny or it's something that some people absolutely lose their shit for a cheese. Those are probably the kind of people who would buy an illegal black market cheese.
A truckle of cheese.
A truckle off of some, you know, when people joke, oh, you got that off the back of a truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is literally getting your cheese off the back of. And also the other funny thing about this to me is that people sometimes talk about money as cheese.
Yes.
You know, so have you got enough cheese? Well, these people.
There's also cutting the cheese.
That's farts.
You see, I told you we farts. Would get lavatorial.
You know, Leanne and I swore that we would start this show this morning. We wouldn't go anywhere near bottoms or lavatories or anything revolting like
now
that.
Now we've done genitals and.
We've ruined it. We were doing so well. All right. Well, anyway, there's your cheese story to start the whole week for you. You needed this. You didn't know you needed it, but now you do. Right. And then that leads us to the pizzeria that Leanne and I wanted to open up once called Cheese's Crust.
Yes, but remember that.
We were never brave enough to do it.
That was from a movie.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was Clark's. Hilarious. Oh. Yeah.
And the waitress comes up to the table and she goes, "Welcome to Cheese's Crust. Our pizzas are heavenly and divine, and they will save your soul." And she's like not interested in it at all. And then the pizzas arrive and they're in the shape of a cross.
Ridiculous.
I did have a pizza over the weekend, which was very nice. So there's cheese working for me. That may be illegal cheese. Who knows?
I went to a restaurant in the south of Johannesburg, considering that's where my dad grew up, where I grew up.
Yeah.
And my dad's family, who are now visiting from overseas, we had to go down memory lane.
Uh-oh.
So we all adults piled into a taxi or a van that we rented off of, you know, one of the apps. But you can't choose. Like with Uber, for instance, you can choose Uber Black, yeah. Various types. Uber van is just Uber van. You don't know what you're getting. We got into this like proper taxi. I think he uses it as a taxi as well. Okay. It was not in a good state.
Yeah.
And his driving was incredulous. But yeah, I went through the back of town and into Rosettenville, Turfentine, and ended up in Robertsham at Giovanni's restaurant, which I was last there 33 years ago.
Wow, real trip down memory.
Yeah. And interestingly, my aunt who was with us was a waitress there.
Oh.
And when we walked in, the owner, Giovanni, whatever his name is,
I would think that's
was there
a safe
and recognized
bet.
Her.
I think it's a safe bet to guess that the place called Giovanni's might have an owner called Giovanni. I don't know. I mean, it's not too much of a stretch.
Yeah.
that would be my first bet.
No, exactly. So, yeah, we had, that's the pizza that we had.
A puzza.
Yeah. And also interesting was comments about how things have either deteriorated or improved since they've left South Africa.
What, you mean the foreign guests?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And you
it's
must
my
have
family
heard,
from Australia.
Yeah,
you know?
You must have heard some of both. I know how you feel about all of them.
Oh, no.
No, listen, I think weekends like that, well, you've now had a whole week or two with the fans. It can be very draining, too. You sometimes just, like, I want to be in my own house and just do my own thing for, like, 1 or 2 days.
Yeah.
When you're looking after people, it's hard. It sounds like you were entertaining them nonstop.
All the time, yeah.
Sure. Okay. That adds to the
strain. It does. My brother and I would find each other and lean against a wall somewhere and go, "I'm so tired."
And then they get all back gone to now? It.
Yeah, they left on Saturday.
All right. Well, there we go. Leanne's life going back to normal slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Let us know what you're doing in the comments. And we haven't really been paying enough attention to the comments this morning. So let me do that before I get shat on by the people in the comments section. Because you know what they like, right? So let's go. To make blue cheese, you need to stick copper rods in the cheese, says Bitcoin Boot. I didn't know that. Are you talking about Geno's?
Geno's, okay. Yes, thank you.
That's what Carl says. Geno's. He's also from the South.
The South.
I feel lactose intolerant now, says Raven. Listen, some people are big on food, but you get people who are like extra, they zone in on a particular kind of food, become experts in it.
Yeah.
I've never really been a big cheese guy. I can name a few of them, mostly from the Monty Python cheese skit. But otherwise, I wouldn't know. I don't know the difference between a brie.
Provolone,
a ricotta. I don't know any of these things. What do I know about these? I couldn't tell you, except most of them I won't eat. I did once order something and it had a smelly cheese in it and made everything horrible. So I'm definitely not a candidate for that stuff. Gareth, for someone of immense wealth, I'm surprised by your Neanderthal palate. I'm not, first of all,
immense I'm wealth.
Immense wealth. Fuck, I should be so lucky. Anyway, yeah, I do. I have such a bland. I mean, I can eat chili and stuff, so I don't suppose it's that bad. And I like a wide variety of food, but I'm by no means a sophisticated.
Mm.
What do you call them? A gourmand.
A foodie.
Yeah. I think I'm probably. Yeah, you get the live to eat people, you get the eat to live people. I'm the eat to live people. I'm not the live to eat people.
Yeah.
And it is amazing to me how many people's whole day or week or year is centered around meals.
Ooh, even their travel choices.
I'm going here because I want this.
Residence or town.
Yeah. I felt so bad. We went to my brother and sister-in-law yesterday. A little family lunch, and I had the worst headache. It started at about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was just like a zombie for most of the afternoon.
Mm, that would have been a migraine, surely.
It was something like that.
Yeah.
I was like lying down, and I was no use or fun at all. Very, very boring. Cheese is fungible. Well, is it? Can you trade cheese for anything? I suppose you could. Maggot cheese? Oh, gee. Please tell me that's not a thing. Would Gareth just take a pill instead of eating if he could? Wouldn't you, that darn kitty? I mean, that would be amazing.
No, a lot of people would not.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a complete, I don't hate food. Good food is amazing. Right? We're all going into the end of the year now. There's all that holiday stuff that people are going to be thinking about. It wouldn't be Christmas for me if it wasn't Christmas food. But I haven't thought about what I'm going to have for lunch or supper. Have you?
No, I haven't.
No. Some people, they've got the whole thing planned. Some of them are not even foodies. They just, they prepare all their meals. So they know exactly what they're eating the rest of this week. They know there's no surprises. Yeah. And in some ways, I can kind of understand that. It just takes that. It's like people who wear the same
outfits. Especially if you've got a million kids.
Yeah, you don't want to be thinking about that. It gets quite boring. But some people, it's like, ooh, tonight I'm going to do. Maybe they're very talented chefs. I'm going to make this, and it's going to be fantastic, and I'm excited. And the whole day, they're building up to it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never never thought about life that way. But I suppose different stuff, huh? Different strokes for different folks. Carl says, one of life's greatest pleasures is good food, and we live in the best food country on earth. Do you really think so?
Definitely one of the best. If you look at our restaurants and chefs and the talent that we have.
He says, this conversation is ridiculous. Carl, how about that? What do you mean ridiculous? Not everyone is a foodie. Am I missing something here?
No, you're not missing something.
Ridiculous. What do you got a worm in your head, Carl? What's going on here? My husband grew up with a regular menu, certain meals and certain days of the week.
Oh.
Yeah, there are people who do that too. Hey, I'm not criticizing foodies. I'm really not, thank God. And you're the kind of guys who will be buying the stolen cheese from the great cheese robbery in England. So we need you. All I'm saying is not all of us are motivated on a daily basis by food. I will tell you this on a quick update, because we haven't spoken about this since we had Tanya Fisser, the gardener, on.
Yes.
But my vegetable garden is looking fucking spectacular, okay?
That's amazing.
I've got spinach up to here. I've got lettuces. I've got little tomatoes growing. I've got all the herbs. Fantastic, fantastic stuff.
Have you eaten any of it yet?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone in and just like pulled a leaf off a lettuce or whatever, but I haven't made anything. This week's the week to harvest. Ah, but it's looking fantastic. So
I
just want to say I'm not a disgrace.
Yeah.
I was very worried that this was going to be a complete fuck up and I'd have to come back on the show and say to you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think anything was going to, like, amazing was going to come of it, so I'm quite proud.
No, and I'll tell you what, it looks, look, especially after the rain now, it'll be fantastic. So that's looking good. You'll find things to learn, and I'm learning a little bit of horticulture. You got to get a horticulture at some point.
Yes, you've got to.
Yeah. Anyway, some of the stinkiest cheeses are white dudes for Carmela. That's from... Oh, that is great. That is from Gray. Okay, very, very nice. Sugar says, today I have to be super early. I left my unfinished skopo at work. It must be a boom there. I have my perfume ready now. Oh, So if there's any smell in the world that is extremely off-putting, no matter what, it's like an old lunchbox or something that's been left in a packet over a long time in the heat.
Someone was speaking a few days ago about potatoes that were in like their digs.
Oh, yeah.
Raw, like normal potatoes.
Yeah.
Uncooked.
Yeah.
That they'd forgotten somewhere and they couldn't find these things.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, all male digs as well.
So what happened?
Because they ferment, that's where you can get vodka from. It's one of the sources. Right. Apparently it was the worst smell in the world. It smelled like rotting bodies. They found them eventually, these sloppy, sprouting, juicy potatoes.
That is revolting. Don't they? I mean, I've seen potatoes grow like roots. And
yeah, they sprout.
Right, and
yeah,
they have little leaves.
You can plant them, yeah.
Potatoes are a weird thing. I don't know how to grow them. I don't know anything about that side of things. But yeah, again, like carbohydrates, they keep telling us it's bad for you. Carl says, I'm not a fucking foodie. I hate that term. I'm just saying good food is what makes life worth living. Hey, I'm not disagreeing. I do know what I'm doing for lunch.
Ooh.
I am. I'm going for lunch with three other people this afternoon to celebrate Trump's victory, which is very exciting.
My gosh. Yeah,
so I don't know what I'm going to have yet, but I'll get to that. You know, I haven't thought about it. I'll look at the menu and then decide in a minute. That's just, by the way, another thing. These people who take so long to decide what they're going to have at a restaurant. I always feel for the waiter or waitress. They're like, I don't really care what you want. I just want to get your order in. Person's like, well, what if I change the mushrooms for, may I have broccoli instead? And you know, how thick is the sauce? I mean, like, the waiter's going to be the guy to ask. He's like, well, it's somewhere between very thick and not thick.
Yeah. I'm one of those people who won't say, can I have this pizza, for instance, but with no that, but plus this.
Oh, no.
I don't like wasting people's time.
No. No, who are you that you need to change the menu?
Mm.
And what, you have your own show on the Food Network? That you're so fucking important? Well, I'd like this, but with artichokes. Sorry, Gordon Ramsay. I didn't know you were coming to my restaurant today, Gordon Ramsay. We'll just change everything. Let me get the kitchen ready for you so you can come in and shit on them
if it's not going your way.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't have exactly the right amount of lemon juice on there. It's ridiculous.
This is actually something. Why can't everyone check the menu online to decide what you want before going to a restaurant? I've started doing that too.
Have you?
Yeah, because I really just don't like wasting people's time.
Yeah, I think that's good. Leanne, at Piccolino's, they give you a menu where you choose your toppings. It's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, in that case, it's great. That's cool. They're prepared to do that.
All right, let's go to Dr. Hanan because we've got lots to talk to him about this morning. And really? He's not there yet? Oh, okay. Well, will you let me know? Okay, excellent. Can I get a cheese sauce, but I'm lactose intolerant? Yeah, I mean, I always find it very funny when people, they have an allergy to something or whatever. And then they expect that the entire food industry must come up with an alternative just for them.
Mm.
So they still want the taste, but they don't want any of the problems that come with all of that. I also feel, I really do feel for people who have very sensitive stomachs, because I obviously don't. I even if something pretty awful, what did I have in Bulgaria that I didn't like at all? Thank God I didn't have like a lot of it, but there was this rice with these little things in it. And I thought, that's probably like, I don't know, bits of olive or whatever.
Yeah.
It was liver.
Oh, no. I felt instantly nauseous.
And even then, I mean, like, I think my stomach is a concrete mixer. I was fine.
Mm.
But it was not very good. Didn't taste very nice. I needed to wash that away with whatever I could find. Something very alcoholic and very strong. But I also feel for those people who have like, what is it, IBS?
Yes,
irritable bowel syndrome. Because that is, I mean, first of all, terribly embarrassing. Constantly need the loo, right? And then anything they put in their stomach, there's a 50-50 chance that they can end up with a problem.
Yeah, and it doesn't always come out the back end, irritable bowel. Mm. It also affects the front end. And there
How
we go, laboratory again.
How nice. How nice. Bitcoin Butt says, what's the verdict on vegan cheese? It's an abomination.
I've never tasted it.
I haven't tried it either, so I don't know. Although, hang on, I did order something vegan the other day at some like health restaurant, and they said there was cheese in it, but they couldn't have used cheese if it was a vegan restaurant. So I didn't even notice. Mm. I only thought about it afterwards. Can we talk about the TDS with the doctor? There is a serious mental health crisis on the left. We can ask him. I mean, I would be fascinated to know if there are people actually self-reporting at the moment in the US, because we know that loads and loads of people on the left have been screaming and posting videos, and you've seen the videos of them like losing their shit over the fact that Trump is president.
Yeah.
Just having tantrums. And we played some of those on Friday, and yes, they were very, very funny. And I don't have to feel sorry for these people because I don't know them. They're not in my life. But yeah, there's a problem. And I think that mental illness is a serious, serious issue in America. And it's been attaching itself more and more to politics. You know, like if your candidate loses, that means you have a breakdown of some kind. You have some sort of mental health crisis because the person that you voted for didn't win. It actually happens.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can find out. I don't know if this is on the top of Dr. Hanan's list. He's probably got real life issues to deal with every day with his patients. But we can ask him. So you could always throw your questions this way. Just let us know in the comment section. All right, let's go to Dr. Hanan on a Monday morning. This is always a good time for us to get our mental health in check. And because he has so many things that he can answer on all kinds of levels. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Are we going with a moustache here? What's happening? Movember.
Listen, I try growing patches. That's not my strong point.
No. Well, I mean, you want to see what I'll look like at the end of November? It won't. You'll
just look the same.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, it's pathetic. Anyway, so I think you're still doing better than me. But yeah, okay. Let's talk about this because it came up in the comments section already in America, and I'm sure you've been paying attention to what's been going on in American politics because who doesn't? It's part of our universe, right? And it has a trickle down effect on everything. But I see all these people losing it on social media. I see a lot of people having tantrums. They're not coping very well. Tears streaming down their faces. They're screaming into the sky. Surely this is an indication that these people are not well. Because as much as I've been upset by things that happen politically, and I do maybe more than most, I take seriously what goes on in international relations and in the global, you know, kind of political milieu. But I don't let it upset me.
Well, I mean, you look at sport. It happens in sport, too.
It happens with sport, too. Is this an issue? Should we be paying attention to this?
So let's define trauma. Well, the trauma is obviously we are born into this world blank slates. We don't know how the world works. And we develop models of how the world works. And we develop these models help us predict what's going to come up next. And the moment the world presents something different to our prediction, our brains don't like it. Our brains rebel against it. They resist against that. And that's a definition of trauma. And hence, everybody will at some point go through a traumatic event where they expect something to happen and it just doesn't. They predict the world to work in a particular way and it just doesn't. So from sports, I predict my team will win and they don't. In politics, I predict my candidate will win. Mm-hmm. But they don't. I predict that a certain law will come into effect, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that creates a sense of trauma, which is normal. It happens to everybody. Suffering is when I don't accept the new reality, when I stay stuck in the middle. So I stay stuck between what I wanted it to be and between what it actually is. So where I'm stuck in the middle is where the distance between what I expected versus what it actually is. So, and that's up to us. The trauma is not up to us. That's life. Life will present unexpectancies and life will present uncertainties and life will present things that we don't want to happen, but they have. But that's not up to us. What is up to us is whether we move forward and we accept the new reality. So should we be paying attention to trauma? Well, yes, but no, that's life. But should we be paying attention to how we deal with it and whether we move forward or stay stuck? That's completely under our control and we should be.
All right. Well, it would be a waste of us to not use your expertise. And since you've already brought this up, it relates very well to what Leanne's been dealing with. You know, she lost her dad a couple of days ago. And obviously there are things that happen in that cycle of kind of grief and having to deal with losing someone very important in your life. What are those stages like now, and kind of where can she expect to be finding herself next in terms of her emotions? Mm. You know, because she's got to get back to work today.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks now. So.
Yeah, so there's a tough stage, right?
Yeah. So first of all, sorry, Leanne. Loss is never easy, and psychologists refer to the stages of grief or the stages of loss, which is shock, denial, there's guilt, bargaining, anger, depression, and then finally acceptance. But I don't subscribe to that model because, Leanne, as you would have experienced, you can go through all those seven stages in 1 minute.
Yes,
you can go from
absolutely.
Acceptance to denial to shock to acceptance to I'm fine to I'm not fine. Literally in a minute.
Yeah.
But eventually, when you marry the reality of what it is, then the vacillation between these seven stages just stabilize, and eventually you sit in a comfortable spot in acceptance. When we go through loss, it changes who we are. Leanne, so you would have naturally have experienced this literally that morning, or I'm sorry, I don't know when that happened, but the moment it happened, your world changed. Suddenly, your world went from blue to green, or from a particular model to a brand new, and you've changed as well. Suddenly, things that we think are funny are no longer funny. Suddenly, things that we thought were serious are suddenly funny to us. Our interests change. The way we engage the world change. We become a little bit more jaded, maybe even more cynical. So we don't stay the same. And the real healing happens when we eventually learn to accept and marry our new reality and the new version of ourselves in this reality. Mm-hmm. Because loss is when our world changes, a piece of us goes missing, it's no longer there, and our brain is not willing to accept it. Our brain wants to go back to an old world which was familiar to us. And acceptance is finally the realization that it is what it is, and I've got to play within this new world with this new framework that I have. And the only way to finally accept the new world is to immerse yourself in the new world. So, Leanne, for you, it would be going back to work, engaging with your family, engaging with your friends, really going back to life, because acceptance is not an intellectual pursuit. It's an experiential pursuit. In other words, you've got to live out the reality of what it is, and eventually your brain adjusts and lives and marries acceptance.
That sounds very true to what you say about doing before even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the stage where we as a family are at now. You don't have a choice, really. You need to get up and you need to do work or function normally. But I think, and the other thing that's kind of taken the focus off of myself losing my father has been my mom losing her husband, her soulmate, and looking after her because of that. And she 100% goes through all of those phases of grief in one day, from picking up the phone saying, I don't think I'll join you for lunch today, to phoning me 2 minutes later, actually, I will. But yeah, you've just got to kind of take every opportunity to be with other people, because being alone can be hard, but allow yourself then that time to be alone and not so that you don't feel guilty about not thinking about it all day.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I give the analogy, you know, when we go through a loss, it's like the universe giving us a 20 kilogram sack of potatoes to carry for the rest of our lives. And it's very difficult, and we don't have the opportunity to put it down. You just learn to carry it differently. There's no healing in the sense of going back to the way that we were. Healing, as I said, is the marrying the reality of the new version of ourselves. But again, the only way is to get your mom out, to get your mom to not go internal, to God not go into your head, because the healing doesn't happen when we make sense of it, because there's no making sense of loss.
No.
There's no making sense of grief. 1 + 1 does not equal 2, and it never will in your head. The only way that it will ever make sense is in retrospect, when we look back at it after we've healed. Things make sense when we look in the rearview mirror. In other words, when we move forward and we create a life for ourselves and we get your mom out and mom to engage and mom to create a new sense of purpose and fall in love with different things and fall in love with different people. And I'm not saying getting to a new relationship, but fall in love with being a mom and fall in love with, you know, being a sister and fall in love with, you know, maybe a certain art or creative pursuits, or fall in love with a new passion. And as she moves forward, and by the way, she must take her time. There's no race here. She doesn't have to do it within a day or within a week or within a month or within a year. Some people take some a lifetime to pursue that particular goal and to fall in love with something else or something in addition. And there's no race. There's no, nobody's in a rush. But as she moves forward and falls in love with different things and rediscovers herself in a new way, then she can look back and go, okay, I can make sense of the loss. It makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
But right now, there's no making sense. And that's why you should never get into your head, certainly not when you're going through this kind of grief.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful.
Also, I mean, to go back to the people who are losing their shit on social media, I'm sure that you're going to be on my side on this one, Doc, but it's probably not a great idea to be filming yourself having a tantrum. It's probably not a great idea to show the whole world, no matter how much of an attention seeker you might be, how deranged you are. rather, like at this point, your phone might be better served being off, and you have real world connections and you rely on those people and you have conversations with them. If you're not coping with stuff, whether it's a serious thing like Leanne has gone through with losing her dad, or if it's a stupid thing like you can't handle the fact that Trump is your president, sitting with people you care about and talking to them and, you know, being around actual people is probably much better than people laughing at you on X.
Opening yourself up to a whole
community. You can even help me understand, why would people do that? Why would people share things like that online?
Yeah, I think maybe from a number of reasons. One is virtual signaling, like I'm part of a community and I'm going to lead this fight. I'm going to die on this sword. Another one, people looking for some form of feedback or acknowledgement for the way that they feel. They're looking for some form of calibration by other people telling them that they're okay and everything's going to be okay. We'll carry you. You're part of our group, or you're the leader of our group. But it's not helpful. You know, if you want to truly heal, you lean on the closest people to you to help you progress and move forward, to deal with what it is as opposed to marry what it was. Again, we don't want to get stuck with the fantasy of how we wish it was, because that's suffering. We want to marry the reality of what it is.
Right. Okay, very good. Well, thanks, Doc. Always good to check in with you, and we will speak to you in a week's time. All right.
I look forward to it. Bye, guys.
Excellent. Dr. Hanan and our little mental health checkup on a Monday. It's useful occasionally having him around.
Jeez, you know? Today especially.
Get like a free session.
Glad I came.
Yeah. So it wasn't a total waste of your time.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, it's fun to joke and talk about all the stupid stuff that we do, but it's also nice to have actual advice on how you can deal with real life situations. And as he says, you know, do stuff, get busy. You're not going to get better in this world if you sit in your bed and cry. Horrible and tempting at the same time. As
reserve time for that. Allow but it can't take over your life.
No, 100%. Okay, we'll be back in a moment or two. This is the Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network, Monday morning. We're in the middle of November already. Dun, dun, dun.